Okay, so there are two parts of my talk. The first part is about emerging large-scale coherent structure and the small-scale random environments. That's a joint work with Andy here, and he already mentioned the core part of the results, so I will provide a little bit more details. So the second part, I will talk about convection at large Prandtl number. And the common theme of these two parts is about equilibrium statistical properties or theories for these kind of complex dynamical systems. So let's go on to the first part. For the first part, as in Andy's talk, we are more or less interested in large-scale coherent structures. So a prominent example is here, great red spot on Jupiter. So we are interested in understanding why these kind of large-scale coherent structure pop up and why they persist. And hopefully eventually we will be able to do some prediction. And okay, so the as our first step, we use a toy model, which is a one-layer model. A two-dimensional fluid flow system for potential vorticity. It takes the following form. We have seen this quite a few times this week. So here the Q is the potential vorticity, psi is the stream function. The potential vorticity Q and the stream function psi, they are related through this relationship, where beta is the Beta effect, F is the F-plane effect, H is the bottom topography. This is the QG one-layer equation. D is the dissipation operator. Could be very complex. F is the external forcing. So in the dissipation operator, if J equals to 1, then the dissipation corresponds to Ekman damping. When J equals to 2, it corresponds to eddy viscosity or Newtonian viscosity. For J greater than or equals to 3, it corresponds to hyperviscosities. Okay, and I think there's no explanation needed why this model is useful for predicting large-scale structures. Okay. So Andy already gave us a very nice review earlier in the week. So the usual way to usual way of predicting large-scale coherent structure, or the easier way at least, is equilibrium or empirical step MAC approach. So in that approach, you consider undamped, unforced system. Then you use the information theoretical approach, where you maximize the Dishano entropy with given information. And you have various conserved quantities. These conserved quantities, they serve as constraints on the one-point statistics row. Then the most probable state has a mean field equation usually takes this form. Remember, the Q is related to psi, like Q equals to Laplace psi plus low order term. So this is an elliptic equation, okay? And moreover, most of the mean field of the predictions of the mean field equations, they are stable, nonlinearly stable under the appropriate assumptions. That tells us really this equilibrium empirical statistical mechanics theory has something in it. And I'll advertise one more time.
Okay.
Why is the most part of the state here? Is there some fundamental? We don't know, but this is why I say in general, we don't know, but for each individual prediction, we can check using, for instance, Arnold Kruskal stimulating criteria.
So what exactly do you mean by
they mean if I give you a small perturbation, small.
So
yeah,
it's linear.
Yeah, if you
linear stability.
No, it's not linear. It's not linear. It's not linear. So it's a large infinitesimal. Yes.
So isn't there built into the PDF?
Yeah.
A kind of Lyapunov functional associated with it that almost guarantees not linear stability or not? And I understand what's going on.
You're way overstating it. So it's but it's not a Lyapunov stability. Let me mention a dramatic result due to Bruce Turkington, who's not here, and a group of people around him. So in a sense, you're right. So if you take our Jupiter theory, everyone knows you have these crazy zigzag jets on Jupiter that violate all the known stability criteria. You can prove that the most probable state, which does predict the spot at 22.5 degrees south, is nonlinearly stable in that crazy zigzag jet. But the proof is not a simple nonlinear stability proof of the type you know, to give you some idea.
Okay. So, but on the other hand, we all realize that in real life, systems are usually damped and forced. So we're naturally interested in knowing whether the Stepmack theory can be used in the damped-driven case. So in that case, there are some partial results. So basically, it all says either the forcing is on the largest scale, that means on the first energy shell, or the second case is there is no forcing, so only dissipation. So the flow is decaying. In both cases, the large scale structure that emerges is related to the ground energy shell. So, but the forcing is either zero or on the largest scale. But in real life, the forcing is more than often on very small scales. So here is an example. So for instance, about the Jupiter's weather layer, we all know it's bombarded by small scale plumes coming out of the core. And likewise, the ocean's mixing layer is also bombarded by the storms. And these plumes and storms, compared to the size of the domain, it's very small. And they sort of come up a random location at a random time. So for us, it seems natural to model these kind of small scale forcing using random small scale forcing. So since the small scale, the forcings are small scale, it seems to us it's reasonable to include the Newtonian or eddy viscosity. So to make the everything transparent, we reduce the model further. So we consider really the two-dimensional Navier-Stokes equation in the vorticity extreme function formulation. So Q is now really the vorticity size that the extreme function they are related in this way. And it's imposed on a square with a swimming pool geometry. That means no penetration and free slip. Okay, so the forcing is this kick forcing in time. So every time interval of delta t, I throw in a vortex of amplitude a of the shape omega r. So omega r is a bell-shaped vortex. So it takes this form, and when this little r is small, this is a small vortex. And the randomness comes in the center of the vortex, the xj. Xj is basically uniformly distributed within the domain. So here is a schematic plot. So here is our forcing, and here is the domain. Okay. So if the forcing is relatively weak, and the dissipation is weak as well, then the situation is very close to the undamped, unforced environment. So that's how Andy and theory is applicable here. So they apply the various statistical theories to this model, and they found out these theories worked very well. So here are some numerical evidence that we have already seen in Andy's talk. So as you can see, we start with T0, the initial vorticity field is zero. So we are throwing vortices of the delta t is 0.01. So this is 10 vortices there. As you can see, as time evolves, the small vortices that we have thrown in, they organize and they form a large scale structure.
These are single signs?
They're single sign, but I will make a comment. They would have infinite
circulation flow radial distance.
Well, because of dissipation, the circulation.
We're in a swimming pool. So they have canceling potential. And by the way, you could put in the angular momentum constraint and try to do this for all of space. And that's a nice problem for some mathematicians who want to work on this.
So the amplitude of the kicks is fixed.
Right now it's fixed, but actually that will be a parameter, T parameter that I will play. Yeah.
It's actually quite interesting when you fix the amplitude of the kick.
Yeah.
We did some experiments back in the late 90s, mm-hmm. my former student, and you actually can generate very steep gradients. And this is why I brought up this point the other day on staircases. You can generate basically multiple vorticity mm-hmm. gradients and little anomalous jets within this surf zone.
Okay. I would love to hear more about that.
So you actually added random vortices of this type?
Yes. We were doing that in 98, 99.
Yeah. Rode and I were doing it in 98, 97.
There's something about our target was the tropical cycle.
We had a theory. No, I understand.
Was, that's not different. But
our target was inverse cascades of stuff you can't resolve. I'm thinking of oceanography with small Rossby radius effects. Impacting larger scales, actually, probably where we were coming from.
Well, anyway, here is another plot. And as you can see, as time evolves, you can see clearly a large scale coherent structure with random perturbations around it. Okay. So you could also check other quantities, for instance, the theory of Andy and Marcus Grote said one possibility using, say, for instance, the energy entropy theory predicts the most probable state, the mean field, is the first eigenfunction, which is I times I y. We can calculate the correlation between the vorticity and that first eigenfunction, and as you can see, the correlation is very good. There's another way to characterize the first eigenfunction, that is Dirichlet quotient, which is the quotient of the entropy over energy. And the Dirichlet quotient attains the minimum value of 2 for this first eigenfunction. As you can see, well, I can zoom up. Anyway, here you can see the Dirichlet quotient becomes very small, so that's another indication that the prediction is quite good. The third thing is about energy. As you can see, since we initially set the flow equals to zero, so the energy is zero, but as time evolves, it spins up, then sort of reaches a plateau, so you have random perturbations, but basically the energy remains constant.
I'm not sure I completely see the physical picture here. You're feeding in these little point vortices every so often, and you've got this weak background damping of some kind.
Right.
And so that, and sort of the object is to see what time.
Yeah, what time we.
Well, but beyond time 200 there, you see more or less a statistical steady state. So the forcing is balancing the dissipation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the other two curves say that while you've always got a fluctuating turbulent signal, it never dies, its mean dynamics is looking very much like this ground state of equilibrium stat-met.
Uh-huh.
And what Xiaoming will do is supply a rigorous proof mathematically that that picture is true.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
okay.
What it is.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's not make my job easy.
So the energy is primarily constant because the dissipation is essentially balancing the forces.
Yeah, eventually it will be balanced, yeah.
Because if you had this not in a swimming pool geometry, but if you have this in an infinite plane, and you just keep bombarding the vortex with point vortices, the circulation continues to increase. However, the maximum winds may not increase, but the circulation may become broader and broader. But I'm just wondering if that's partly also because of the swimming pool, or is that primarily kind of a fluctuation, dissipation, that equilibration that is maintaining a constant energy?
It's the second thing. It's a fluctuation, dissipation type thing. But a really, if someone in the math side is interested, doing the unbounded case with angular momentum is an interesting issue, just for fun. Just for fun.
Okay, so so for me, it's quite clear there should be mathematical theorem behind it. So and yeah, I started working on it. And here is our approach. So what we do is we decompose the random kick into two parts. So the expectation part and the pure fluctuation part. Then you look at the cumulative forcing effect. First, look at the deterministic part. So at time t, you have basically thrown in t over delta t many vortices. So this is the deterministic part.
Excuse me, what is the mean what you're averaging in?
Average over the random space. So remember, the center of the vortices, it's uniformly distributed within the domain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a random variable, so I average.
So it's an ensemble average, not an as a useful average?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. For us hurricane people, our bars typically mean either time or...
Ensemble average, yeah.
Okay, so we will have other averages in the second time. Okay, so since the phenomena that we observe looks like of order one, so naturally we would require that this cumulative forcing term of order one. So if this is of order one, then naturally the amplitude should scale like the time step. Otherwise, this won't be order one. So let's say the amplitude is a coefficient CR times the time step. So that's as in the way we play with this. So then we look at the stochastic part. So then the stochastic part, the fluctuation part, it should be A times this, but I write it in this way so that I can use so-called Donsker's invariance principle. So Donsker's invariance principle tells me this part, when delta t goes to zero, it actually converges to a Gaussian process. So this is a generalization of the central limit theorem. Central limit theorem tells you you have IID of random variable, you add them, scale them, you have the Gaussian distribution. But this is Gaussian process, has a time variable over there. Okay, so this gives me the Gaussian process. Remember A from the previous slide says A is coefficient CR times delta T. So this one is really A over square root of delta T times the Gaussian process, which is CR times epsilon times G of T. So I have now a small parameter epsilon, which is the square root of the time step. So now I can recast the problem that we have. So the forcing, the discrete in time kick forcing, approximate it using the deterministic part and the random kill fluctuation part. Okay. So the mathematical theory, I think, existence, uniqueness of solutions, existence not being very measured, they are all well known. So I won't spend any time on that. So for this audience, the heuristic of limit is probably more appropriate. So in the previous model, if you take the limit as epsilon goes to zero, then you see formally you arrive at the deterministic Navier Stokes equation. Okay, so sort of the zero noise limit. Okay. Then if this part of the forcing is small, then we know for this Navier Stokes equation, there is a unique steady state. Not only that, steady state attracts all trajectories. So that steady state is given by this nonlinear limited equation. Okay. So if you the forcing term is even smaller, then this nonlinear limited equation can be linearized, and you would have to the leading order the potential vorticity given by this formula. Now with the specific forcing that we have, you can estimate the deterministic part or the expectation part of the vortices looks like of a constant of the R squared, so it is small as well. So then the leading order vorticity under small scale under small forcing assumption looks like this. This is something that you can ask your undergraduate students to calculate, and this is about what you will have. Then you can check whether this prediction fits with the Maida rotate prediction. So one of their predictions is sine x, sine y. So we calculate the correlation between these two, and it turns out that the correlation is very high. So that tells us, you see, if this is the right one, then this is almost the right one. This is the right one, this is almost the right one. So partially explains why it's a work of a successful prediction. So there are some more numerics. This is the plot of the heuristic of prediction. You can look at the correlation between your flow and your prediction, and the correlation is strong. Look at the arrow, relative arrow, they're all small. Okay.
I'm a little, how important is the dissipation of the boundaries? Before you were saying it's not important.
Say it again?
The dissipation at the boundaries, at the edge of the swimming pool.
Free
slip.
It's free slip all on the
sides.
Yeah,
it's
a
free slip.
Yeah. Okay.
No boundary layers.
We don't want the boundary layers.
Yeah, okay.
This is now, just so I'm clear about this is for the sort of standard Fickian diffusion case, right? You had mentioned at the beginning that you were going to look at three different forms of the diffusion. And which form is this?
This is the eddy viscosity.
Okay.
If we could add the Ekman damping and hydroviscosity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just the Ekman damping is problematic. Ekman damping itself cannot control noise.
Right.
Here's the reason Ekman damping, you rescale it, it looks like the undamped case in a restretch time. And people probably know this trick.
Yeah.
Apply that trick, it's not going to do anything by itself. So
well,
you need some.
What about the hyper diffusion? Is it
they
similar
do.
To this? Then?
Yeah. They will do. But even better than, the way it settles to the equilibrium. Let's say the coefficient is the same.
So does it approach this attractor more rapidly, or
intrinsic
fluctuations smaller, or both?
My analysis says that.
Honestly, for this simple case, we didn't investigate hyperviscosity. We did hyperviscosity compared to diffusion, though, for unequal signs and in jets and in scenarios of blocks and stuff like that, and. The catch is hyperviscosity can make extrema in vortices that aren't there. And that sometimes will delay the agreement.
Got it. Interesting.
By creating extraneous extremum.
Yes.
So, do I understand this correctly? It goes back to what Bjorn was asking.
Yeah.
You are on a finite box, but you assume periodicity, right?
No periodicity, but it's effectively periodicity.
What is it?
This is the swimming pool geometry. So basically, it's a quarter of your periodical domain.
So the mirror images with the other sign of the vorticity are next door.
Yes.
But doesn't that mean that the velocity by symmetry on the boundary is always zero? And that it's effectively the same as putting a wall?
The velocity, the normal velocity is zero. The tangential velocity is not necessarily zero.
No, by symmetry, you always have zero velocity. I don't believe it because the vorticity goes the other direction in the neighboring box.
Okay, so we can discuss
it's
this
minor
afterwards. It's a calculus problem.
Free slip.
It's a free slip, but yeah. So here are the mathematical theorems that we have. The first one is the extremely easy one, which tells us that the noisy solution converges to the zero noise solution in this energy space. So L2 is the square of the L2 norm, which is the integral of the quadratic square. This converges to zero almost surely. That's for almost all trajectories. One simple commentary is you see the noisy solution satisfies this equation. Although this noise has a small coefficient epsilon before it, but we all know that the white noise is infinite almost everywhere. So this is a small parameter times infinite. So it's not a good idea to work with this directly. So instead, you work with auxiliary quantity Q tilde, which is Q minus CR times epsilon times G. And Q tilde satisfies a much nicer equation with a noise which is truly small, as long as the G, the Gaussian process, is smooth in space. And then you can look at the difference between Q tilde and the zero of a noise solution, and you satisfy this equation, you use the usual energy estimate. So you would have this result. So this result is for finite time, as you can see, because the usual energy estimate goes up as time goes to infinity.
The essence of this proof is that the deterministic limit you're forcing a standard function.
The deterministic of
the deterministic solution is stable.
Yes, in a sense. This proof, I do not need any.
Could you repeat the question? There's lots of clarity.
So Isaac's question is whether, in this case, I require the deterministic solution to be stable. And I say no. Look at this, the proof of, because it's finite time result. I do not need the stability, so this is for any kind. So look at this.
So stable, Isaac's asking this question, stable in what sense, Isaac?
I think it's about nonlinear stable, so small perturbation remains small. So,
the point is you can always be small enough that an instability is within that limit.
Yeah, but you could have positively Yapunov exponent, but on finite timing, still okay. I'm not talking about the infinite time interval yet.
So for a practical guy, if you're interested in how long this to achieve this attractor based on, say, an intrinsic time problem, how many circulation times based on the swimming pool vorticity do you have to wait to see this attractor state emerge?
Well, it depends on various parameters,
right? You can read it from the data of the calculation. You have 10 vortices per one unit of time. The spin-up time was 200. From zero to the statistical state. Vortices.
Well, I guess I'm just asking probably a simpler question, and that is that you're giving it a kit.
Yeah.
Finite circulation.
Right.
Yeah. I know the units of circulation.
Yeah.
And it's a small
yeah.
So if I do this in a random process,
yeah.
Okay, and over a given size of my swimming pool, there should be an intrinsic time scale that I can probably back out. As Andy says, it's already in the answer. So how many little kit turnaround times I need to wait?
But I haven't calculated that, but from that simulation, we can read out from the plots that we have there. But in general, I think you are asking how does it scale with the dissipation coefficients,
yes.
The size of the main center.
Well,
I haven't done that.
This is
the world of rigorous math, Mike.
Yeah.
Adjustment attractors is hard.
I'm not being glib. I'm just telling you,
this is the kind of thing where you're not going to have a theorem that's going to give you the time of adjustment.
Okay, but I mean, I'm
you won't have a theorem for
if
it.
If I've got a lot of towers firing.
I wasn't being glib, I'm
okay.
Just saying. There are things you can prove and things you can't really prove. That would be very hard to prove.
But you understand where I'm coming from.
Yes.
I have a lot of towers injecting cyclonic vorticity in the lower troposphere.
Absolutely.
I want to know how long it's going to take. I'm a forecaster. I want to know how long it's going to take for me to get to a settled state so I can declare a storm, for example. So that means, you know, something that you...
Yeah, but I understand. But like Andy said, it's a tough question for us. I mean, there are things that we can say and there are things that we cannot say anything.
So if you want applied math answers, those can be made. But if you want theorems, it's a different world.
Got it.
So here is another theorem. So if we want to have a convergence rate, so we could have a convergence rate of epsilon. Epsilon, remember, is the square root of the time step. But the convergence rate is in the mean square of sense. So for that, in order to get this, so we could write to prime as the difference of the noisy and the zero noise solution that satisfies this Ito type equation. Then you apply Ito's formula, then you have this sort of energy type inequality where the BKs are really the coefficients of the Gaussian process. You expand your Gaussian process, you know, in space and in noise. But one tricky part here, we have the Brownian motions, the one-dimensional Brownian motion, beta k in our case, they are actually dependent instead of independent. So this noise is really like two-dimensional, even though it lives in infinite dimensional domain. So looking at this, as you can see that this estimate is true for any finite time, then if you want to have this estimate true for all time, then we need the stability of your deterministic solution. So this is, you need to make sure this quantity is positive and is somewhat equivalent to say the deterministic part is stable. So then there are other ways to look at the results. So another way to look at it is using so-called random attractors. So we could look at the noisy system as a random dynamical system. This we can show that this random dynamical system possesses a random attractor. So a random attractor is really a family of compact sets, and they are invariant under the flow, and they attract all bounded sets. And what we can show is these random attractors actually, as the noise level goes to zero, they always converge to the attractor of the zero noise this case, I do not need the deterministic path to be stable. So this is sort of general, as long as epsilon goes to zero, the attractors of the Lyman system always converge to the attractor of the zero noise system. In the case that the deterministic curve system is stable, then this attractor is trivial. Then it tells you that the random attractor is somewhat trivial as well, because it's close to that trivial attractor.
It always has fluctuations, but it's close.
Yes, but
it's,
it always has fluctuations. And the fluctuation in time could be extremely large because it's a white noise fluctuation. But on a statistical average, it is small. Okay. So we could also look at the invariant measures. So let's say I want to do statistics with the system. Then I would use a measure to perform my average. So the measure that's relevant for the system is if it's in an equilibrium state, it's always an invariant measure. That means the measure mu zero, the measure should be invariant under the flow. So for any phi, which is a statistical quantity that you want to know, this should be invariant under the flow. So phi, the little phi is the flow. The capital phi is the statistical quantity. So invariant measures are, in fact, unique for small data. Okay. Basically, when the deterministic part has a unique point in the track. And we can show that in that case, the invariant measure is unique. And the ingredients of, well, mathematically, these are the things that are involved in that I do not want to. Need to talk about it here. Okay.
What happens when the data is not small?
So when the data is not small, nobody knows.
Any experiments on sort of
experiments of well, see the depending how big in the intermediate regime, the results still valid. I mean, it still appears to be the prediction of the theory, but the parameter regime I looked at it. It's beyond what the theorem applies, but that's sort of always the same in the mathematical theorem. We can only prove it in a very special case. Then, when the parameter really becomes big, then all hell's loose. So you don't see the large coherent structure in a small oscillation. So in that case, we don't know.
So, if you go back to the previous slide,
yeah.
The theorem is showing that the invariant measure, the expected value of the measure, is that
yeah, so,
so the attractor of the mean system, or the mean attractor, is invariant. Is that correct?
Yeah, in that sense, yes. You have to take them by mathematical expectation. The left-hand side, that you see, you're interested in let's say, U squared, that gives you the coherence, for instance, second moments. But so you left the flow pushing forward, okay? Then but once pushed forward, it becomes stochastic. So you have to take with that.
Here's a dumb question. Small data. What small data is just small parameters, or
yeah.
Small data? Okay.
In this case, my parameters of say for instance the amplitude of should be small enough.
It's a non-dimensional unit. There, it's a Grashof number.
Yeah.
If you
no,
care
data,
about non-dimensional numbers,
data being
it's
more.
A small Grashof number.
Okay, so we can sort of summarize our result in the following way. So. Our noisy solution, as time goes to infinity, it converges to a unique stochastic process. You know, we denote as Q infinity, So on the other hand, if I let the noise level goes to zero, then this stochastic process converges to this deterministic variable, which is a solution to the deterministic equation. Then as time goes to infinity, this solution to the deterministic Navier-Stokes equation converge to a unique steady state. And likewise here, this random variable, as the noise level goes to zero, it goes to a fixed point, which is this. So with Andy suggested it.
So your other thing.
Yeah, I have 8 minutes. So anyway, I want to get back to which is the one. So the random environments, actually, we could change its sign, but the P part is that the mean has to be non-zero. Otherwise, it's fine. If it's zero, then it's pure fluctuation. We do not know how to do that. Okay. So now let me talk about the second part, which I have eight minutes, basically. So Bosanet's equation, we have seen this a couple of times this week already as well. So this is a non-dimensional form. Non-dimensionalized using the thermal diffusive time scale. So U is the velocity, P is the kinematic pressure, theta is the perturbative temperature. So it's perturbation from the temperature T away from this conduction state 1 minus Z. So no slip, no penetration on top and the bottom. And the periodic in the horizontal directions. Okay, so.
What's U3?
I'm sorry?
U3.
Oh, U3 is the third component. Okay, so yes, you're about
it. Which is simpler?
That's okay.
So I'm not a co-author on this paper.
And you always have a comeback, don't you, Mick?
Okay, so so the parameters, we also have seen the Prandtl number, which is viscosity over thermal diffusivity. So Prandtl number measures relative importance of kinematic viscosity over thermal diffusivity. Well, the Rayleigh number really measures the forcing, the differential forcing over overall dissipation. So large Rayleigh number really means large forcing. What we are interested in is the special case of the large Prandtl number. So so when the Prandtl number is really large, we can formally drop out this term. Then what we arrive at is the so-called infinite Prandtl number model. Okay? So and these things are related to Earth science, but not atmosphere. So the main question is, as a mathematician, is whether this kind of asymptotic of expansion is valid. Okay. So more precisely, we would like to ask whether solutions to the Bosanet's equation converges to the solution of the infinite Prandtl number model as Prandtl number goes to infinity, or moreover, we would like to ask whether the statistical properties of Bosanet's system, they're close to that of the infinite Prandtl number model, because we know for Bosanet's system, these systems of behaviors are very chaotic. So looking at one single trajectory is not the right way to look at things. Really, you should look at statistical properties. So the first result is a simple one. Basically says over a finite time interval, the infinite Prandtl number model is a valid approximation to Bosanet's at finite time, but that you have to pay a penalty. There is an initial layer. Okay, so the system, in fact, the problem as viewed as a perturbation problem is a singular perturbation.
What is initial layer?
If you look at, for instance, the Prandtl, the Bosanet's equation, you need initial data for both the velocity and the temperature for the infinite quantum number model, this is gone. So you see, it, as long as you know the velocity, I mean the temperature, you can solve this Stokes equation for the velocity. So you do not need initial data for the velocity. So in general, if you start with a general initial data for the temperature and for the velocity for the Poisson's equation, they will not match the one that comes determined by the infinite quantum number model. So then there is a layer that needed to adjust to that. Right? So that's the initial layer. And in this case, it's a good the initial layer. In this case, it's just it decays very fast. So it's not like persistent oscillation.
Is this layer distributed between the plates, or is it confined to the boundary layers?
Oh, this is in time. This is in time.
The time layer.
Time layer, yeah. Okay. So, but anyway, still, I would like to advocate that we should look at the...
Sorry, one moment. When you say short time, you have a two time analysis. Short time is the adjustment time of the initial.
No, but a short time really means any fixed finite of a time interval. Okay, then the faster time scale is the viscous time scale. And the long time scale is the thermal diffusive time scale.
Right, and so on your last slide? The conclusion was that the initial layer will always give you a rapid approach to the balance solution.
Correct. The relaxation time, it's not oscillation time.
It's two times.
This is the Stokes operator. Okay, Stokes operator basically says you have the Stokes equation. You can solve this, so symbolically you say the velocity is the Stokes operator. So the initial layer, as you can see, this is one part of the initial layer, this is another part of the initial layer. The tau is the faster time scale, which is T over the over epsilon. Okay, so now I have 1 minute. So what do I do? So I think I skipped that part. I want to go to, first I think everybody agrees with me that the behavior of the long time behavior of the system is complex. See, there are various ways to looking at it, mathematical and computational, experimental. So you look at the equilibrium statistical behavior. So how do we look at the statistical equilibrium statistical behavior? Those things are measured, quantified using the so-called invariant measures. Again, this is the deterministic part. Now expectation is no longer needed. So let's say mu epsilon is an invariant measure for the Poisson-esque system where epsilon is one of the quantum number. Then the key part is for any statistical quantity capital phi, this relationship must hold. This basically says that this measure is invariant under the flow. So here I have written the Poisson-esque system as in an abstract form. So this is the T of U theta equals to F epsilon of U theta. Okay. So here the B is the usual bilinear form in Navier-Stokes theory. So it's the rate of projection. T is, as I said, a very half projection from the space of velocity into the divergence of free, the square integrable space into the divergence free part. And A is the Stokes operator. Okay, as you can see, the singular nature of the problem reflects here. See, it's a 1 over epsilon. And this condition says, oops, yeah, I have run out of time. All right. So let me go cut the chase. So part of the result says that for environmental measures of the Bosonic system, if you project it down, actually it converges to, in a weak sense. Weak sense really means if you take any statistical quantity, you take the measurement, they do converge, okay? So, but you have to first look at the projected sense. The reason is about, remember the singular nature of the problem. So some statistical quantities are better than the others, okay, so.
And marginal distribution?
Yeah, this is
project
the
on theta.
Yeah,
project
yeah,
on temperature.
Yeah, yeah. Then we can circumvent the projection. Eventually we get to the convergence, the lifted sense. But I do not know the lifted sense of how that type of oscillation part is canceled. I have an argument, but I do not have that much insight to tell you that. So then there are results on Nusselt numbers. So Nusselt number is, as Keith talked about yesterday, the vertical heat transport. So what I can show is, in fact, these Nusselt numbers are really statistical properties of the system, in the sense that it is saturated by ergodic invariant measure. So this ergodic, this time average, we have to take the Lin soup because mathematically limit may not exist. But just since I define my Nusselt number in this way, in fact, I can show that the Lin soup is limit. And so time average is spatial average, so it's ergodic. We can show that as the Prandtl number goes to infinity, the Nusselt number for the Bosonic system is bounded about by the Nusselt number for the infinite Prandtl number model. And I also have some new result on the bound on Nusselt number, which takes this form. And this part are really down to the 1/3 power is the usual one that everybody knows. So, but the rigorous mathematical result before my result is for infinite Prandtl number model. So, it's only for, so what I, my contribution here is for large but finite Prandtl number. I have this bound. This bound is relevant for Earth mantle because for Earth mantle this is small. Okay. And also, I would like to point out that in the proof, we used a non-monotonic background temperature profile, which is related to James' question to Keith yesterday. So we believe that actually the average temperature profile may be non-monotonic instead of monotonic. But there are a lot of questions to be answered. For instance, in the numerical simulation, to us, it's a non-trivial problem. Non-trivial problem because it's intrinsically long-time simulation. So what you can do is only there to sort of look at the statistical part. It's not a single trajectory. So, but even for that, it's not any numerical method that will converge. I mean, we have some devised some method with any. So it's not trivial. Okay. And also, still the result that we had over there, it's of upper semi-continuity. If you want continuity, one way to get around that is by adding noise. So noise.